is, it's fun to be here. This is a... I was thinking as we sing, you know, I could probably let you guys off without a sermon because all the stuff that we sing about is really important. Let me think about that. Okay, I've thought about it. I mentioned, I think, a couple weeks ago how gratifying it is to come in and see familiar faces and meet lots of new folks and see that you're still faithful. Oh, my goodness. That blesses my heart. I come home and I start telling Claudia who I saw today and who I talked to, and so exciting. So good to be here. I've got two things that I want from you, and there may be something else as we go. I will not be back during April. I have commitments. Dave Road Cup, I know, is going to be here, and I'm not sure. My son John may be in there at some point or somewhere down the line. I don't know. So when I come back, I'm looking forward to being in that redone sanctuary. Not that I don't love this place. This is good. But I saw the picture out there, and that's going to be exciting. And the other thing is, I don't want to see any coats, any long-sleeved shirts. Guys, if you want to wear a muscle shirt that day, I'm okay with that, all right? But I am, as you are, sick to death of winter. We're going to talk today about a subject I just hate, because it steps all over my toes, and I know it's going to step on some of your toes. I remember my dad used to preach. It was an interesting thing. He preached in a lot of farming communities, and you know the old tradition was you could have shook people out as they went out, and so he not shook them down, shook them out, and so. You know, he'd have some sweet little lady, and he'd have just take a gentle handshake and talk to her, and that's so good. And then the next guy might be a big, burly farmer. And, man, he'd put a vice on my dad's hand. And, you know, he's like, oh. And then he'd forget. And the next one might be a little lady, and he'd crush her hand. It was just a crazy thing. But occasionally he would have somebody come out walking like this. I said, boy, preacher, you sure stepped on my toes this morning. And I may do that this morning, but I may need to walk out that way too because I'm stepping on my own toes. And we're talking about worship, who we worship, what will we worship, and basically we're talking about idolatry. There are a lot of people here this morning. Tim and I were talking just a few minutes ago when he said, well, there are two variables. We've got a big crowd today. Either it's you or spring break is over. I think I know. But there are a lot of people in church. And speaking of that, how many places of worship do you think there actually are in this country? Lean to a person next to you and just give them a number. Just what do you think in this country? Do it right now. Okay. Did anybody hear 100,000? Okay. There's another one. Okay. Did anybody hear 150,000? Still got one over there. I think, what was your number, sir? 800,000? That's a little high, but that's still, you know, I'm supposed to give you a prize right here, or whoever said that. And I thought it'd be nice to have honey buns. But man, I had that sitting on the seat there as I came over. So I owe you a honey bun, okay? And I can tell you it was really good, you know, if that helps any. Actual number is 250,402. That's a big number, but I think it's even higher than that. There are a number of buildings around here in Ellettsville and Bloomington and Martinsville and Indianapolis. We call them office buildings. And tomorrow morning, thousands of people are going to flood into those, and that'll be a lot of you. They'll sit behind desks and cubicles, and some of them will find their ultimate sense of purpose and identity and worth in those offices. Some people will actually sacrifice in those buildings. They'll sacrifice the best of their time, their efforts, their emotional well-being, some even their families. And there's some other other buildings around here, here and other places, where they have big vaults. And we have a sense of security if we've got money in those vaults. And we know that Jim Chesney or Johnny Lindsay, you know, they're looking after it. I talked to Johnny this morning, and I said, you don't have too much to worry about with me. Sometimes that's what where we get our confidence and our trust, and we kind of worship that. There are also buildings not too far from here where they have instruments of torture. And people come in wearing spandex and shorts and leotards, and they do stuff until it really begins to hurt. And some of them really continue this and keep doing it. And finally they stop and they look, go and look at themselves in the mirror. And then they look this way. And then they look this way. And some of them smile, some of them frown, and some of them then go weigh and see how much they weigh. And again, it's either a smile or frustration. And it's really, there's lots of worshiping going on in January and February and March in those places. And then it kind of fades. And the next January, man, there'll be a crowd of us in there again going after it. And my wife Claudia and my son Darren go to the new Y. And when they go, I say, oh, I hate to do it. I'm so tired tonight. And they come back, and I say, did you have a good time? Yeah, that was really fun. And I'm thinking, yeah, I had a good time, too, watching the news and watching Jeopardy and, you know. And when we look, sometimes we look at the scale or we look at our profile, and people start having eating disorders because we're told what our bodies ought to look like. And our goal is to worship our appearance. For some of us, the worship center is the mall or a basketball court or a football field or TV, one of the biggest shows in the last few years. And I won't ask for crude confessions. How many of you have watched it? I have watched it. American Idol. Don't even like that word, but that's what it is. And as the music said today, we are worshiping people. We were made by God to worship. That we're made by God to worship Him. And it doesn't always happen. All of us treasure something above everything else in our lives. All of us will give our devotion to somebody. We will offer our sacrifices to something. We will look for the blessed life somewhere because that's how we're created. In Israel, the rivals to God were called idols. And idols have not disappeared. They've just gotten real sneaky. They're made so attractive, we want to sacrifice our lives to them without even knowing it. So we're going to spend some time this morning talking about idolatry. It's not fun, but we need it. We all do. It's the center of every sin we commit. And I know about it. And I know how to fight it, and I fight it all the time, and you do too. Why does the Bible make such a big deal out of idols? We're going to look at those questions and maybe some more as time allows. If you've ever done a study of idols in the Bible, if you never have, you're not alone. I never have until now. Some of the idols you might remember, Baal, the Canaanite god of the Old Testament, the name means master overlord. And they believed he controlled rain and could produce good crops. And his wife, Ashtoreth, was a goddess. And in fact, this led to temple prostitution because they wanted them to kind of get together and produce fertility and prosperity. And so when you went to church, I call it the temple, you gave your tithes, and then you got a prostitute. It's probably a good-sized congregation for bad reasons. Marduk was lord over rain, troops, war, and accounting, for crying out loud. Maybe they sacrificed a cow on April 15th or something. I don't know. Doesn't sound like a bad idea. You know, when you look at what you pay in taxes, you know, cow's pretty cheap compared to that for a lot of us. Moloch was a real dark god. This is the one people sacrificed babies to. Really happened and was really ugly. And then Dagon was the god of the Philippians. I always want to say that doggone. It just sounds, or daggone, but it's Dagon. You remember David and Goliath? But Dagon was thought to be the father of Baal. And the funny thing is, the Philistines and the Israelites were always fighting back and forth. And I don't remember exactly how it happened, but the Philistines snuck in one night and stole the Ark of the Covenant and took it back with them. And if you remember the story, they put it next to their god, Dagon, who was about 12 feet tall. And they put them next to each other in a tent or a temple, I can't remember. And they came back the next morning, and Dagon had fallen over, face down, in front of the Ark of the Covenant, as if it was worshiping. And what in the world? So they set it back up again next morning, same thing. Interesting. Crazy, crazy stuff. Mention one more, the Greek god Peyton, who was the god of football and passed all the others. So I just want to make sure you were paying attention. You know, most of the time, idols were statues, and they were big to suggest power and beauty and grandness, and were very expensive, or were in the form of a person or an animal, or sometimes both. Now, they knew the statues weren't real, so they would have a ceremony that was supposed to activate it and energize it, and then it could hear and see and speak and so forth. Kind of like a divine vending machine. You know, you get what I think that's where the principle or the behavior of kicking vending machines or tipping them or hitting them to get what we want. I think that's how that started. Gary, the one in the teacher's lounge, I don't know how many times I beat the snot out of it. And one of those things. Sometimes, or something kind of like this happened on Mount Sinai. And you remember, Moses went up to get the Ten Commandments, and he came down, and he looked a lot like Charlton Heston, if you saw the movie The Ten Commandments. How many of you saw that movie? Yeah, a bunch of old people in here. Okay, me too. Well, Moses was gone a long time, and the people finally asked Aaron, his brother, make us a god to go before us. Essentially, we're tired of waiting on Moses, the guy that took us out of Egypt. I don't know what happened to him, but we need help. And so, bad situation. You know, we talked last week about impatience that we have, and that's what happened with the Israelites. They were impatient. Moses was gone too long. Cell phone was dead. You know, that. And so, we're just like that. You know, we don't want to wait. We talked about it last week. We want to hurry up, and whatever it is, we want it now. We want God to answer us right now. And that's the problem with the real God. Sometimes we have to wait because his timetable has priority. But we want to hurry it up. We want to get going because, we got stuff to do. Some of you are probably thinking, man, I hope he finishes up faster. We won't beat the other churches to Cracker Barrel. Anyway, the story goes on. And so Aaron took the jewelry from everybody and molded it into a golden calf. And he said, now tomorrow we'll have a festival and ceremony to activate the calf tomorrow. Now, I don't know if it happened this way. It did in the movie where they were doing all the celebration and Charlton Heston, I mean, Moses came down and saw it all. And so Aaron had to explain. And so he said something like this, don't be angry, my Lord. You know how prone these people are to evil. They said to me, make us gods who will go before us. Because they said, this fellow Moses who brought us out of Egypt, we don't know what happened to him. So I told them, give me your jewelry. I threw it in the fire, and out came this calf. Go figure. Who would have ever guessed? Crazy stuff when you read about it. But we're prone to do the same thing because the real problem is internal idolatry, and we all have it. It's when you and I look to something to give us something that only God has the power to do. Part of what makes idolatry such a problem is that we take stuff that's really good, like money and work and power and love, and we turn it into an idol. And we do that when we give it our ultimate devotion, when we make it the center of our lives where only God belongs. Paul says in Romans chapter 1 that people exchange the truth of God for a lie, and they worship and serve created things rather than the Creator. Problem is, we really don't think we have an idol until our idol is threatened. And listen to this. This is important. Prosperity tends to make Prosperity tends to mask our idols. Crisis tends to reveal them. Let me say it again. Prosperity tends to mask our idols. Crisis tends to reveal them. I was talking to my brother-in-law last night, and he's one of those guys. I love him, but he's I don't think he's got a bunker, but he's got a lot of stuff stored up in case there would be problems. And I started asking what he had stored up, and this is kind of what we did: ice cream, coffee. I can't remember what lots of different kinds of ice cream. And you know, I got to thinking about it, and I thought, well, you know, what would be a panic for me? And it's like a lot of you, you know, if I couldn't get the medicines I need, you know, that would be an issue. But and we start thinking about that, you know, then there's a possibility we have idol issues. Suddenly there's a huge crisis, and I realize. So I'm not going to ask you if you have an idol problem, because I know you do, and I do. It's who we are. John Calvin said the human heart is an idol factory. We live in an idol factory. So the real question is going to be, which idol is God's biggest rival for you and I? And then we got to get rid of it. So that's kind of what I want to get us to today. If you looked at your outline in the bulletin, there's a place to put answers to an IQ test. Now, before you start looking at your watch and think, oh my gosh, look at the time, I got to get out of here. It's not an intelligence test, okay? It's an idol quotient is what we're going to look at. There are two parts to this. Some of you I had in class are thinking, oh my gosh, am I going to have to take a test again? But you're going to write down some wannabe idols that are roaming around in our society right now. And then the second part, I'm going to ask you some questions and have you figure out which ones you're wrestling with that you may not know. Sound like fun? Yeah, maybe not so much. Okay, but it's important. All right, so you've got some blanks numbered there. And under number one, I want you to put money. Money. Absolutely, it can be an idol. Number two, success. Number three, intelligence. Ever hear somebody brag about their degrees or their future education, or for people still in school, it might be grades or GPAs or SAT scores. Number four, attractiveness. We spend lots of money and time and physical pain with this one. It's scary when you look at some of the people that were older TV stars and movie stars and what they have done to themselves. It's if you've seen Joan Rivers lately, I mean, I could have nightmares about how she looks. And Dr. Phil's wife, I believe, has had some work done. And George Hamilton, whenever you see him on a commercial, he looks orange. You know, he's got some stuff going. Melanie Griffith, if you ever watch Hawaii Five-O, she's been on some episodes, and her face looks pretty good down to about here. And then, boy, you see the wrinkles, and, you know. And if you were watching the Oscars and saw Kim Novak, she looks like the Joker in the Batman. I mean, she could be his wife. They've got the same expression, permanent expression. But we do it. Number five, good relationships. We want everyone to like us, no matter what it costs. It's interesting that there's a book title. I'm going to have to find it. The title is, If You Can't Live Without Me, Why Aren't You Dead Yet? I have to think about that one. That might make a country song one of these days. Do we find ourselves existing just for the approval of another human being? Counselors call that codependency. The Bible calls it idolatry. Anytime we put something in the place where God alone should be, bad things happen, even in relationships. Number six, pleasure. We have come to the point that we can be oriented around self-gratification. We can medicate our drink, ourselves, to the point that we escape any negative feelings. Nobody likes pain, but sometimes we just like the feeling the medication or the drink brings. We call that addiction. God calls it idolatry. Number seven, the church. Did he say the church? Yes, he didn't say the church. You heard it right. Church, or our reputation for being a spiritual leader or knowing the Bible really well, or being a great Bible student. If we think that can't be idolatry, look at what the Pharisees and Sadducees did. And without naming names, if you watch some of the televangelists on TV, I think we can see that too. Number eight, work. People trash their lives worshiping at the altar of work. Number nine, putting another, for this one, just put something that we haven't mentioned yet. It might be a reputation, it might be food, it might be your dog, you know, something like that. Okay, now I'm going to ask you a few questions, and after each one, put a little check mark next to one of those things that we've listed there that might be an issue for you, okay, that you're tempted to idolize. Which one of these do you find yourself thinking about the most? Because our idols are what we tend to daydream about and think about. If one of them's down there, put a little check mark next to it. And if you may find yourself putting two or three check marks next to something, that will tell you, yeah, I got it. I see where the problem is. Which of these do you most fear losing, that life might not be worth living if you don't have it? Which of these gives you a sense of identity? Which one makes you feel that because you have it, you're somebody? No, if you have grandkids, kids, you have been through this. And I remember when Claudia and I got married, I would introduce her and say, "This is my wife, Claudia." And then we started having kids, and I would say, "This is my son, John, and this is my son, Darren." And then as the kids got older and they got into sports and music and everything, somebody would come up and say, "Oh, you're John's dad. You see the shift right there? You're Darren's dad." And I've taken another shift. Now at Sherwood Oaks, I'll meet somebody and they'll say, "Oh, you're Claudia's husband." You know, I'm getting used to that little by little, but our identity can certainly be an issue. Which of these makes you feel most secure? Check mark it. Which of these do you want to be known for the most? You know, I like to think I was a good teacher, a good biology teacher. And I have people, kids that tell me that, and the kids that didn't like me don't ever talk to me, so it's okay. But that's kind of where I'm at. And you may have that too. And that kind of changes when we retire. And a lot of you have experienced that too. Which one of these causes your emotions to go up and down? That is, which one makes you happiest when you have lots of it and saddest when threatened with losing it? Which one of these would other people who know you really well say is most likely your idol? And which of these do you give your best to? Because we tend to give our best behavior, our best actions, including the most money, the most energy, and our ultimate priority to. Which one would you sacrifice the most for? Okay, now hand your paper to the person to your left. No, I'm not going to do that. I'd like to come back sometime. No. It's good to talk to someone, though, you're close to, about your idol issues. It's good to focus on this because idols can mess us up. There's a reason why God says in Deuteronomy 6:4, "Hear, Israel, the Lord your God is one." And later on, "Love the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength." The reason is if you give honor to any other god, it will wreck your life. It will wreck mine. Idolatry is bad not just because of what it does to God, robbing him of honor and worship and adoration that he deserves. Now, God hates it because it also does nasty things to us. It's a train wreck. It costs us three things. It costs you God's purpose for your life. If we belong to God, we are sold out to him. We have given our lives to him. He has set an agenda for our life, for a purpose. Idolatry has no agenda for us. In the ancient world, people, when they moved into a new community, each little community had its own idols. And so if you moved in, you know, you just worshiped whatever idol was there. It's kind of like if you live in Indianapolis, you know, you like the Colts. And if you live in New York, maybe you like the Giants. And if you live in Bloomington, you like the Hoosiers. Indiana basketball is starting to scare me a little bit. It's kind of last one out, lock the door. And in West Lafayette, they have, I don't know, they have something up there. Where's Dave Sanford? But the idols were to get crops. See, I didn't say anything bad, Dave, okay? Fertile cattle, rain, healthy kids. But no other god gave out the Ten Commandments, because idolatry is an attempt to manipulate spiritual power to give us what we want. People in ancient times were concerned about right and wrong, just like us, but they didn't get it from their gods. In fact, the mythical behavior of gods was much worse than the people. But in the tiny place called Israel, things were different. The truth is, there is just one God, the Creator, the universal, indescribably good, just, and loving. To him we offer no burnt offerings, no firstborn. Prophet Micah says the Lord requires us to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with him. You and I were made to worship, love, and follow in the ways of this true God. Idolatry will cause us to miss out on the purpose for which we were created. And idolatry will exhaust us. The primary demand of most idols is to perform. My guess is that everyone in this room either feels or has felt pressure to perform. And the ante keeps going up. The bar keeps getting set higher. We felt it at school, at work, at home. Our kids feel it. You know, we have to have the perfect home, which is the perfect color, perfect landscaping. Not mine, by the way. If you look at my front yard, it looks like, after this winter, early American tornado. If you look at my backyard, it looks like Sanford and Son. We had relatives come in from Texas a few years ago, and she couldn't get up the stairs with Claudia's aunt, so we took her in through the garage. And she came in and said, "Boy, I feel like I've been in American Pickers after going through my garage." I don't think that was a good thing. But we're supposed to have perfect children who play perfect t-ball, who go to perfect schools, marry perfect spouses, have perfect marriages with perfect careers, within perfect manageable boundaries and perfect balanced schedules. We're supposed to have perfect appearances with a perfect wardrobe, a perfect church, excuse me, with just the perfect amount of volunteerism and participation. And if anyone, including God, thinks we're not perfect, we can't rest until we convince them that we really are. It's called a Midwestern lifestyle. God calls it idolatry, and it will wear us out. Idolatry takes more and more and gives less and less until eventually it has taken everything and given nothing back. No idol ever said, "Come to me, all you who are burdened and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." When Jesus said that, he was talking to people who had idol problems and didn't even know it. Idols do not have what we need. Misplaced devotion causes us to do crazy things. There's a story about a guy who went to a Pacer game, and it was packed. Pacers were winning, kind of like they are now. And there was one seat down about sixth row. It was empty. And he kept watching it all through the first half, and nobody sat down there. So he finally went down, asked the guy, said, is that seat taken? And he said, "Well, that's my wife's seat, and she passed away." And he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that." And, you know, just offered his condolences. And he said, "Well, it's team, you're coming to the ball game alone. Don't you have a friend or family member that could have come with you?" And He said, no, they're all at her funeral. Being a fanatic can mess up our values. The word fan comes, excuse me, from which we get fanatic, comes from the Latin word fanaticus, which means mad, crazy. There were a group of Vikings many, many years ago that would eat a mushroom called fly agaric. If any of you were in my botany classes, you might remember it. It's a hallucinogen. And they would eat it before they went into battle. And they just went crazy. And they were called, appropriately enough, the berserkers. And they were the most vicious, evil Vikings that ever lived. And they even, if they didn't have a good war going on and Saturday night was slow, they'd just go ahead and have some anyway and end up sticking each other and cutting each other and all kinds of things. You know, we have put idols on pedestals and mountains and on horseback with swords and spears and hammers and helmets on clouds, on shrines, but no idol has ever been on the cross. Never, ever. Idols don't have what we need. Grace. That's what you and I need most. Grace. Would you pray with me right now, please? Father, forgive us for messing up our priorities, for making idols.